today as we come to the table.
How many times have I found myself not praying like I should, sleeping spiritually, if you will, for the analogy, and by the time I wake up and see the trouble I'm in, I'm surrounded by the enemy. How in the world did this get here? How did an army of the enemy get around me? How did I get in this much trouble? I never believed I would fall in this sin. I never thought I'd be this far from God. How many of us have been there? You know why? You're sleeping rather than praying. Now listen, I'm not trying to lay a heavy trip on you about how much you need to pray, but listen, believer, you need to be praying. We have got to be praying. We need to be praying every day. It doesn't have to be some marathon of prayer, but we need to be setting aside a time to pray and learn to pray throughout the day. We need to have our eyes open because we live in dark days.
Ever fallen asleep while driving, even for just a moment? It's pretty scary. Obviously, it's dangerous to drive a car with your eyes closed. There can be many obstacles that you can't avoid. It's the same in life. You need to keep your eyes open to see the problems that are coming your way. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Mark Kirk, Senior Pastor of Calvary Knoxville. Pastor Mark will urge you today not to fall asleep in life like the disciples did in the Garden of Gethsemane. Stay awake and pray. That's the best way to be prepared for the obstacles that come your way. You have work, school, or parenting decisions to make, and you can't sleepwalk through them. You need to be praying. Now, let's join Pastor Mark in the book of John, chapter 18, with today's edition of Come to the Table.
Now, this is interesting here in verse 3. Judas, having received the detachment, the literal word there is cohort. It was what they called a division of Roman soldiers. Now, guess how big a cohort of Roman soldiers was? 600 to 1,000 soldiers. What is your image of this night in the garden? What is your image? Was it a couple of guys showing up to put handcuffs on the Lord? You know, and all right, you're under arrest, come with us. What is your image of it? Because if your image was a small group of men coming with things, weapons, just to arrest the Lord, like a couple of police cars showing up and the blue lights going, you've got the wrong image. This was an army. It was an army of 600 to 1,000 Roman soldiers. And not only that, notice it goes on, officers from the chief priests and Pharisees as well. And they're coming with lanterns and torches and weapons. This was a small and not even not so small army coming to arrest one man. And again, it's interesting. You think, why would they send so many? Because the Romans in that day, if there was ever an uprising and Jesus was being accused of trying to be a king, Caesar wouldn't allow that. And they had convinced the Roman troops, he claims he's a king. So they get this small army, if you will. They come down there to arrest the Lord. And when they would arrest the Lord, they would arrest everybody. Everybody was to be arrested. The Romans didn't allow anybody to escape. Everyone had to be arrested. And if guilty, they were all executed. Rome didn't put up with it. And so the reason they sent such a large army here is because, again, they didn't know how many followers the Lord might have with him. And the plan was to arrest everyone that needed to be there. And yet this is interesting to me because while these lanterns and torches, imagine the sound of 600 to 1,000 people wearing armor and can you hear this little thing coming to the Roman side? I doubt they were just kind of hanging out going, yeah, what's in you? I don't know. Hey, you know, look at your phone. Well, hey, you got a text right now. They probably weren't texting and walking down. They're probably focused. When they're coming down, I know they weren't checking their phones. They weren't looking at their phones to see. They're doing the marching thing. They've got the lanterns. They've got the torches. Jesus sees them coming. If you wanted to escape, he could have. But guess what the disciples were doing while this army was moving toward Jesus to arrest him and his disciples? Sleeping. How many times, guys, do we find ourselves sleeping when the enemy's closing in and we don't even know it, rather than praying and watching? You see, the reason Peter fell this night was he was sleeping rather than praying. How many times have I found myself not praying like I should, sleeping spiritually, if you will, for the analogy, and by the time I wake up and see the trouble I'm in, I'm surrounded by the enemy. How in the world did this get here? How did an army of the enemy get around me? How did I get in this much trouble? I never believed I would fall in this sin. I never thought I'd be this far from God. How many of us have been there? You know why? You're sleeping rather than praying. Now listen, I'm not trying to lay a heavy trip on you about how much you need to pray, but listen, believer, you need to be praying. We have got to be praying. We need to be praying every day. It doesn't have to be some marathon of prayer, But we need to be setting aside a time to pray and learn to pray throughout the day. We need to have our eyes open because we live in dark days. We all pass through the Kidron Valley. We have the enemy looking for a time he can catch us asleep and bring an army in to crush us. And if it hadn't been for Jesus here, here's the thing I love about this. Yes, they were caught off guard. Yes, they were afraid. Yes, they were scared. Yes, they learned a hard lesson. But here's the bottom line. Even though the enemy surrounded them, who was there to protect them? The Lord was. And so here's where you can take heart. Yes, the enemy may surround you while you're asleep, but you know what? The Lord never sleeps. He never slumbers. And so we can trust that God is going to protect us from the enemy doing more than what God will allow him to do. But I wonder how much trouble we bring on ourselves by sleeping when we should be praying. And this is just the beginning of problems for Peter this night because he was sleeping rather than praying. We're going to see a whole litany of things go wrong for him, the worst of which he denies the Lord. And how many of us have found ourselves in an opportunity to share our faith and denying the Lord or being afraid to speak up? Why? Because we're sleeping rather than praying. Well, I need my rest, you know. Yes, we do need rest, but 15 minutes early won't kill any of us. And if we can learn to get up just a hair earlier and say, I need you today, Lord. I need you right now because I have nothing to offer. Again, I tell you that. I don't kid, but I'll tell you guys that. I said it again before I come out here. I tell the Lord, I have nothing to offer them. I have nothing. They don't need Mark. They don't want Mark. I have nothing to offer them. Would you please speak to them by your word? And God is faithful to do that for those who listen to him. He's faithful to use even somebody like me, and he'll use you as well, because that's the God that we serve. But we have to be praying. We have to be asking God to do it, because if we don't, the bottom line is the enemy's going to surround us and be upon us before we even know it. I think about these guys waking up. Another gospel tells us Jesus went over to them and said, okay, guys, you need to get up. The enemy's upon us. He waited until they were right there, and they slept until they were right there. How much noise does it take to wake somebody up? I'm wondering. But at the same time, it's amazing. He let them sleep till the last minute. By the time they look up, they're surrounded with 1,000 soldiers, lanterns, torches, weapons. But notice what happens. Jesus comes to the rescue. I love it. Verse 4, Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, whom are you seeking? Now remember, Jesus knew that when the Romans sent an army out, they were coming to arrest everyone. But here's what Jesus also knew. You're not touching my guys. You see, who's in control here, the Roman soldiers or Jesus? If you saw this from the outside in that garden, you might say, oh, wow, there's all these soldiers and all these weapons and all this stuff. They're obviously in control. Wrong. We're about to see that Jesus was very much in control, and he's about to let them know it. And he wants them to know it because he's saying, you know what? You can arrest me because that's why you came and that's why I came. But you can't touch my guys because they have to take the gospel to the world. Don't worry. There'll be martyrs at some point. But right now, you're not touching them. And so get the picture. The soldiers are walking up. Jesus goes to his guys. Guys, get up. They're upon us. He gets between his guys and the soldiers, and they're going, ah! They're freaking out. No doubt I would have been. And the Lord walks up to him and says, who are you looking for? He's going to establish right now who it is they're looking for, that it's him and that they can't touch the disciples. And notice this, verse 5. It says, then they answered and said, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said to them, I am. Now, again, your Bible might say, I am he, and the he is going to be in these little italics. You know why? The word he is not in the original language. It's not there. It is literally ego emi in the language. It is just I am. And by the way, it translates from the Old Testament where Moses was talking to God out of the burning bush. And Moses is afraid, saying, if I go see the children of Israel, they're not going to believe that I'm anybody. Who do I say sent me? He said, you tell them I am. You tell them I am. The very name of God, which I love for God's name because he just is. He just is. There's no beginning. There's no end. He just is. He says, my name is I am. You go tell them that. Now Jesus, he says, whom are you seeking? And they say, you know, we're seeking Jesus of Nazareth. He now proclaims the name I am, ego emi, one of the names of God. Again, the name that was used for God's power to Pharaoh, the Egyptians, the children of Israel, and the world by setting the children of Israel free with mighty signs and wonders. Jesus now says, that's me. I'm the one. And he uses this whole I am. The one that set them free is now the one that again will set the captive free by his powerful name, just like he did in Egypt. That is for his people. He was letting them know, I am God. And he's not going to let them know he's God by him saying it. He's going to let them know he's God by the power, because he's going to establish who's the one that's really in authority. Guys, when you think about the name of God, I am, I want you to listen to this. I jotted down just a couple of who he is when it says he is I am. Listen to this. I am the God that created the earth and spoke all things into existence. I am the God who spoke to Moses from the burning bush. I am the God who brought the plagues on Egypt. I am the God who set my people free. I am the God who brought them through the desert and preserved them. I am the God who's about to die for the sins of the world and set the captive free from sin. I am the God who's about to defeat Satan and death on the cross. I am the God who will bring my people Israel back to their land in the last days. I am the God who will keep my promises to them. And I am the God who will one day return and take over the earth and rule and reign from my throne in Jerusalem. I am. That's the I am that confronted those soldiers. Is that awesome or what? That's our God. That's our God. So when he stood up there and said, I am, they had no idea what they were getting into when he said that, but they're about to find out, because notice what it says here. It says at the end of this verse, he said, I am, and Judas, who betrayed him, stood with them. Again, how sad that is, rather than standing with Jesus. But look at verse 6. And when he said to them, I am, again, the word he is not there. When he said to them, I am, they drew back and fell to the ground. You miss a lot in the English here. Because the word pipto, and with the tenses that are used here, here's literally how this reads. When Jesus said, I am, it literally means they were thrown backwards violently and landed flat on the ground. 600 to 1,000 soldiers, plus the officials from the Temple Mount. Can you imagine the scene? Jesus says, who are you looking for? Jesus of Nazareth. No doubt a big, burly, you know, kind of Hollywood Roman voice. I don't know. I'm just kidding. I don't know what it's like. Jesus of Nazareth. I like to think of it that way, right? And he goes, I am. Boom. 600 to 1,000 men fly backwards and fall on their backs with their weapons and torches flailing, trying to keep from burning each other, going, what just happened? How quickly they got up, I don't know, but I get this picture of them all laying there on their back, looking up at Jesus standing above them. It was just him standing there in his power. I am, bam, looking at them. See, what he just said to them was, I'm in control here, you're not. I'm running the show. This has been planned for eternity. You can take me because that's why I came. But you're not touching my guys. Don't you love the power of the Lord? These Roman soldiers get up. I don't know how slowly. I don't know how quickly. But I bet they got up. Maybe some quickly, wondering what just happened. Others maybe cautiously, wondering what was going to happen after that. But shocked, no doubt. The mighty Roman army, the greatest army in the world at this time, had just been thrown on their backs with two words by one man speaking. I wonder how many of those guys got saved. I wonder how many of those soldiers later on said, you know, I quit. No, I'm not saying that, but there was a power there that Rome doesn't have. And there was a power there that a man spoke, who is this man? And as they did their homework and began to look up and hear about him, I wonder how many of them we're going to see in heaven. How did it happen? Man, it was like this. It was like amazing. You know, I was the guy in the back. I didn't even hear it. Bam, I fell back and his torch was in my face. I wonder, you know, I don't know. But this is what it's saying. This is exactly what happened when they were thrown to the ground. Now, they get back up. They're standing there, and the scene gets more intense. So try to imagine it in your mind. And look what it says. Then he asked them again. See, first of all, he wanted to establish who you're looking for. I want you to know it. Now I'm going to let you know that I'm in control. So he says the same thing again as they get up. Whom are you seeking? The point is, you can have me. That's all. And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And I wonder how tentatively. I wonder, was it shock and bold? Was it tentative? Was it kind of with one hand behind him going, okay, you know, get ready, guys, right? Jesus of Nazareth. Now they know he's in control. But look what he says. Jesus answered and said, I've told you that I am. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way. In other words, you have no option. I'm going to keep throwing you guys to the ground. It kind of been fun in one way if they said, we're not going to let them go. We're not going to let them go. Kind of like a Warner Brothers cartoon where the rocks keep on. Okay, they can go. Let them go. You know, I'm dying here. You know, meep, meep, or whatever type, right? That's just how my warped brain works. I'm sorry. But they didn't. They didn't. They didn't question it at all. He made it very clear what was going to happen and how it was going to happen. And it happened exactly in the way in which the Lord said. You know, it's interesting. I don't know whether or not David was speaking of this when he said it, but Psalm 27:2 says this. When the wicked came against me to eat up my flesh, my enemies and my foes, they stumbled and fell. Powerful. So again, either way, they know who's boss here and they realize who's running the show and they know it's the Lord. He said, you let these go their way. Look at verse 9. That the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, of those whom you gave me, I've lost none. You see, Judas had made his choice. Judas wasn't a part of the gang. He was the son of perdition. So the Lord didn't lose him. He was never a part of their group. And yet here he says, you know what? All those that were mine, I've kept, and I'm going to keep them. Now, this is interesting. Again, Peter, you got to love Peter. Peter was oftentimes operating in the flesh. But again, why was Peter operating in the flesh? Remember, he was sleeping rather than praying. And anytime that I am sleeping rather than praying, guess what I do? I operate in the flesh. You do the same thing. If we're praying rather than sleeping, we're going to operate in the spirit. Peter's been sleeping, so here's what happens. Some sleepy time events. Look at this, verse 10. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. And the servant's name was Malchus. Now, several things to note here. A very personal touch by mentioning that his name is Malchus. He's the only one that mentions. None of the other gospels do. But it tells us that John knew the family of the high priest. So this gives more legitimacy and more intimacy to the story that he actually names this Malchus, if you will. But notice it says Peter drew a sword. Now, guys, note this. You have to know a little bit of Jewish tradition to understand what was going on here and what was wrong. Having a weapon on a feast day or feast time was forbidden in Jewish tradition. Couldn't have a weapon. I guess to give you a modern day application today, if we had feast days to the Lord in America and this was a feast day, you wouldn't be allowed to carry. Those with your carry permit, you couldn't carry, right? You have to leave your gun at home. Okay? So just as a modern application, you didn't use weapons. You didn't carry weapons. They weren't with you. And Peter shouldn't have had a weapon anyway because he wasn't to fight a physical battle for the Lord. He was to fight a spiritual battle for the Lord. And so the Lord's going to tell him to put this weapon up, but not before Peter does a great level of damage here with this. Peter, no doubt, was seeing the problems, recognizing the problems, and had brought the sword along with him. As a matter of fact, we see at one point he mentions he had two. So again, you know, who knows? Again, I won't get into Peter's personality, but the bottom line is he did. And while it seems like a very brave thing for Peter to do in fighting for this very reason, Peter was missing the point because instead of praying, again, as we said, he was sleeping and he was saying, we need to fight this battle physically, but our battle is not against flesh and blood. Our battle as believers is against power and principalities in heavenly places. We're fighting a spiritual battle. The battle belongs to the Lord. Our job is to be on our knees in prayer and crying out to God. And again, it was this multitude of errors, as we said, that led him to this mistake. Now, Peter, again, was no doubt greatly emboldened after seeing Jesus' power and thinking that he could do this. Imagine if you were there, and I shared this with those there in this garden when we were there a few days ago. I shared this with them. I had a friend who was a real strong, muscly college football player when I was younger, back before my BC days, or before Jesus, you know. And so we were somewhere, and somebody started mouthing off to us, and in the flesh, thinking I'm with my buddy. Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. He's like, hey, man, be quiet. You know, it's like, okay, I'm big and I'm strong, but I don't want to fight for you. Shut up, you know. You know, I'm like, all right, okay, I'll be quiet. No big deal. But why did I get bold in my flesh? Because I had my big, strong buddy with me. Well, think about Peter. He wakes up startled. Jesus says, I am. All these soldiers fly back. And he's like, yeah, we're taking them. And so he pulls his sword out, boom, and cuts off Malchus's ear. And look, God's mercy to spare Peter, because if Peter had done any real damage, Jesus stopped it from happening. If he'd done any real damage, Peter could have been legitimately arrested for murder. And the Lord couldn't have protected him. So I believe the Lord intervened in a way and kept Peter from doing this so he wouldn't be arrested. But I also find it interesting here that Peter, again, notice what happens. It says that he struck the servant's ear and cut it off. And this reminds me so much of my zealous early days in the Lord. Now, what do I mean by that? Listen, some of you may be in the same place, and I want to encourage you. Another gospel tells us that Jesus picked his ear up and put it back on and healed it. And why is that important? Because in my zeal when I was younger, and sometimes even after I was older in the Lord, I would pull out the sword and cut off ears. And I would say things harsh, without love and without grace. Maybe it was true. It was true. But I was flailing the sword back and forth. Ah, I know more scripture than you do. And whoa, there goes the ear. And boom. And you know what? I'm not listening to you anymore. You've cut my ears off. I have nothing else to hear from you. And I wonder how many times the Lord walked behind me going, ooh, this is eerie. You know, ears looking at you, kid. No, I'm just kidding. Here's the encouragement. Listen, here's the encouraging part. The encouraging part is I think, Lord, my family will never listen to me again. My friends will never listen to me again because I've cut all their ears off. I swung the sword wildly, being in the flesh. But you know what Jesus does? He says, I'll put the ears back on. You just live for me. You be a testimony. You be a witness. I'll heal the ears. And God over time will do that. Don't think that God can't use you once again with your family and your friends. Just love the Lord. Be gracious. Be loving. Be merciful. And God will be faithful to do it. And so, again, his servant's name was Malchus. Look at verse 11. So Jesus said to Peter, Peter, put your sword in its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my father's given me? In other words, I've already made this decision. Don't you understand? While you were sleeping, I was praying, and I was taking the weight of the sin of the world on my back in this very garden, and I've made my decision. This is not the time for a physical battle. This is a spiritual battle, and I'm going to handle this in my way. And so put up your sword. And he puts it up. And notice verse 12, then the detachment of troops and the captain of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. Interesting, they bound him. I guess they felt they had to as the normal means of arrest. It would be like putting the cuffs on a prisoner today. But obviously they knew that it was futile after what they had just experienced with him in the garden. That is, if sinful Samson could not be bound by the power of the Holy Spirit, how much less righteous Jesus? And yet what did he do? I'll let you do this because that's why I came. Just leave my guys alone. And I guarantee you, had they tried to go for the guys again, he would have broken those ropes just like Samson did and said, no, no, we're all on hold again until this is resolved. But he let them because that's what he came for. They tried to bind the one who came to set us all free. And while they made a show of it, the one who sets the captive free could never be truly bound. I want to read these last two verses. We're going to cover them actually next week. We'll go back and cover them sufficiently, but just to finish the story. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. And this was the Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And again, Caiaphas was right. God speaking through him, although he was wicked, but he was the high priest that year, it was expedient that one man die rather than the whole nation, even as it's expedient that one man died for all of us, that is Jesus on the cross, that we might go to heaven. Guys, listen, here's where this ends today. Jesus' prayer in the garden was, if there be any way this cup can pass from me, let it pass. In other words, if there's any other way that mankind can be saved, Father, is there any other way? Can we use any other religion? Is there any other prayer? He knew the answer, but this is the prayer of his human side. If there be any other way, what did the Father say? No, there's no other way. You have to go to the cross. Why do I say that? Because it says in Acts 4:12, as well as other places, there is no other name under heaven or earth by which a man must be saved except the name Christ Jesus. Here's the question. Have you been saved through Jesus and through the cross? Because there's no other way to get there. You can't good your way into the kingdom. You can't obey your way into the kingdom. You can't spiritualize your way into the kingdom. You can't find some other religion because all roads lead to God. By the way, all roads do lead to God. That's the truth, but they all lead to a judgment seat. And the only one that's going to not be judged is going to be the one that has their sin forgiven in Jesus Christ. The question is, have you done that? It has to be through Jesus, and it has to be through Jesus alone. He was crushed and bound for you. Now, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do? What are you going to do with it? Are you going to respond? Listen, I know a lot of you in here know the Lord already, but there may be some who don't know the Lord. And what the Lord is saying is, I was crushed for you. I allowed myself to be bound for you and taken prisoner for you, and I went to a cross, and I died willingly. I could have stopped this at any moment. I hold the power of the universe. Another gospel says, do you not know that I could call 12 legions of angels? I could overwhelm these guys with a word. All I said was, I am, and they all fell down. I didn't even call for backup. This is my choice. I'm doing this because I love you. But will you respond? Here's my appeal to you. Respond. He was crushed for you because he loves you. And he laid his life down and spilled his blood. You have to make the choice. Remember, they walked through the blood together. Jesus didn't force anyone into the kingdom, and he won't force you into the kingdom. You've got to choose to walk with him through that blood, and that is, he paid for it, but you've got to say, all right, Lord, apply the blood to me. I want to be cleansed. I want to be washed. I want to be in the kingdom. So what do you do? Here's as simple as this. Confess it. Confess you're a sinner. I know I'm a sinner. I confess to you that I'm a sinner, and I believe that you took the weight of my sin in that garden, and I believe that you paid for my sin on that cross. Lord, will you forgive me? And I give my life to you. If you will do that, the Bible says, you're going to heaven. That's why it's good news. You're going to heaven. Here's the bad news. You're not going to heaven if you don't go through Jesus Christ. Not because he doesn't love you, but because he gives you that choice. But if you go through him, heaven and the kingdom is yours.
Thanks for joining us today on Come to the Table. The voice you've just heard is none other than that of Pastor Mark Kirk. Come to the Table is an outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville in Knoxville, Tennessee. Pastor Mark is currently teaching verse by verse through the New Testament book of John. This is one of the four gospel books of the Bible. What that means is that it's one of four accounts of the life and ministry of Jesus while here on earth. John brings up many miracles and proofs of Jesus being both God and man. Jesus met with people. He got tired, he cried, and he had a biological family. But he also performed miracles, raised people from the dead, and fed a crowd of people with one boy's small portion of food that multiplied. These two worlds colliding between his humanity and being the God of the universe can be hard for us to wrap our minds around. But John's eyewitness accounts of these happenings make it all the more convincing. To listen to more teachings like this one, head over to thewaymedia.net. If you're in the Knoxville area, we'd love for you to come to Calvary Knoxville this Sunday. We want to meet you. Find service times at thewaymedia.net. Scroll down the page to find a link to Calvary Knoxville. As our time comes to a close today, we want you to know that we're thankful for you, and we pray that these messages make an impact in your daily life. Join us next time as Pastor Mark continues to teach more about the life and ministry of Jesus. There are so many things we can gain from following Jesus' example that he laid out for us in his word. That's all for today on Come to the Table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.